With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Kiwi singer-songwriter Jesse Wilde was raised on the music of the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, Paul Simon, Bob Seger, and Fleetwood Mac, kind of like me. He went on to develop his own musical interests, including the sounds of popular rock and southern rock artists such as Springsteen, Mellencamp, Bob Dylan, and the vibrant up-tempo alternative southern rock beat of Steve Earle and the Dukes, Copperhead Road. The result is the unique southern folk rock flavor of Jesse Wilde, renowned for his onstage presence, ability to rock the house, and connect with any audience. And he's put out a song about a month ago, according to YouTube anyway, called We Had a Choice. And he is quoted as saying that he wrote that song in response to acting Prime Minister of his home country, our home country, Chris Hipkins. Remember that on the 4th of September, 2023, when he said to the media, in response to a question, there was no compulsory vaccination. People made their own choices, hence the title of the song. Jesse is with us now. Hi, Jesse. Thanks for coming on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Thanks for having me.
I want to talk about that song and how you were triggered into writing it. A lot of our listeners will share that that feeling in just a moment. But I can't ignore that list of big names that you have worked with and interacted with. Probably don't need to go through all the names again, but boy, that must have been a hell of an experience, right?
Yeah, I guess I went on a rock and roll pilgrimage when I was about, I think I was about 21 years old. In fact, my daughter's doing the exact same thing. She's living in Nashville, Tennessee right now.
Wow, okay.
She's 21. And I kind of decided after I'd been in a rock band for since I was 17 and we were just playing all over New Zealand, I decided I wasn't really a tourist. I got to London and it was all just pubs and stuff. And I decided I didn't really want to do that, so I decided on going to this rock and roll pilgrimage through America to meet my influences, and there were three I really wanted to meet. I wanted to meet Bob Seger, John Mellencamp, and Steve Earle, and I got to meet all three of them, and that was pretty cool.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's start with Bob Seger, Hollywood Nights. That's still the same. I'm randomly naming them. Main Street, Shakedown.
Old Time Rock and Roll was a big one.
Yeah. Old Time Rock and Roll, yeah. And he's getting on now, but he seems to be in very good health.
Yep, he's just done another tour. I mean, his voice isn't quite what it used to be, but it's still okay. I mean, it's he doesn't fly. He's afraid of flying, so he very rarely leaves.
On the road again.
Yeah, he very rarely leaves America. But so how I got to meet him, I mean, I'll try to make a long story short, but it was I was in Detroit. He lives in a place called Upper Strait Lakes in Michigan, and he was born in Dearborn. I'm not allowed to give you his address because he got a little upset when I knocked on his door. He was like, "How did you find this place?"
Okay, well, so it was a cold call at the front door.
It was a cold call at the front door, and I just, being a tenacious Kiwi, I did a little bit of research and I found out this is all before the internet. This is in the 90s, you know. And I went to a library and I looked up some old newspaper clippings, and he'd recently got into a bit of a verbal fight in a bar. It was actually a country club, quite a flash one called the, what was it called? I can't remember now. But anyway, I went to that bar and I met this guy at the bar just randomly who happened to be his neighbor. And he literally drew me a map to where he thought he lived. And so I parked two houses up from where I thought the house was. I walked down, knocked on the door. There was no fences. It was right on the side of this beautiful lake. And the lady that answered the door said, "No, he lives two houses up." So I realized I'd parked right out in front of his house. I went and I pressed a little intercom on the door, and his wife answered, and I explained who I was. And she said, "Bob doesn't live here," and I had a CD, and she said, "If you leave it on the doorstep, I'll get it to him." And I said, "I'm great. I'm just going out to my car. I'm going to write Bob a note." And I was just leaning on the dashboard of my car writing a note, and he came walking up from around the back of the house. He was wearing blue shorts and a white singlet, like a basketball singlet, that's what I meant, smoking a cigarette. And the first thing he said is, "Who the F are you?" And that's how we met. And then he was a little bit, "How the hell did you find this place?" And I told him the story. And he said, "Hey, if you're from Auckland, New Zealand, you must have something going for you." He was kind of upset because he just had a trouble with a stalker before. Right? And once he realized I wasn't a stalker, he said, "Get your car off my lawn and put it in the driveway and we'll talk." And we spent a few hours together. We had a few beers and smoked a few cigarettes, and I played him some songs, had my new album out. I get to meet his manager and some of the rest of his band. It was, there you go. That's, I hope
that. So he liked your pluck.
Yeah, he did. I think it was, he also, being a Kiwi and being from Auckland, New Zealand, he basically said, "If you found this place all the way from Auckland, New Zealand, you must have something going for you."
Okay. And he was just what? Obviously, he's a rock star. Yeah. But what sort of person did you find there? Just like a normal bloke?
Really nice guy. He was really committed to his family at the time because he had spent so much time touring. And he did say to me, "Jesse, this is not how it's done, you know." He said, "If you knock on Steve Earle's door, he'll shoot you, you know." He said, "If you find his house." And I said, "How is it done, Bob? Because you're not touring at the moment." He hadn't toured for ages. And he said, "Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess this is how it's done, but please don't publish my address," he said.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can see why they'd be insecure about those sorts of details getting out, especially in the US or in that part. Mind you, it's not much safer here these days.
Yeah, but one thing he was worried about is because I gave him a copy of the CD, and that's why he hooked me up with his manager, and he said, I really can't accept the CD. It has to go through my manager because people in the past have slipped him stuff, and this happened to a lot of people.
And then and held him to commit to something that he...
And then sort of said, "Oh, you copied my song, or you did this, or plagiarism." Yep. It's really weird.
Okay, what about the other two that you mentioned there?
I met John Mellencamp at his recording studio. He actually rehearses in a garage next to his recording studio in Belmont Mall, and that was another freaky coincidence. Like, if you go to Detroit, no one knows that Bob Seger lives there. They all think he lives in LA. He's a very private person.
That's the Hollywood Nights.
Maybe that's what it is. They think he doesn't live around here no more, but he literally lives 20 minutes from his hometown. Yeah. And but you go to Bloomington, Indiana, and ask anyone where John Mellencamp lives, they'll draw your map to his house.
Right.
He lives on this like fortified, I think it was an ex-army base or something random.
Oh, dear.
And it's got these huge walls around it. It's got an intercom on a pole, like, and it says, "If you're not invited, do not press this button." So you can't get anywhere near his house. And so I went there and I decided I'm not going to do what I did with Bob Seger. So there's a bar called the Junction Hotel about like a few hundred meters down the road from his house. And I went and stopped in there and I met, there were two guys. It was like a Tuesday afternoon and there were two Harleys outside and there were two guys at the bar. And I brought my guitar in because it was stinking hot and I didn't want it to get overheat. And I met one of the guys, said, "Do you know how to play that thing?" And yeah, and I picked it out and I played a few songs, some John Mellencamp songs. And he goes, "Man," one of them said, you sound like John Mellencamp before he smoked too many cigarettes." And so I ended up hanging out with these guys for the day, had a couple of beers with them. And then they invited me over to their house to play some pool. I checked with the lady at the bar when they were in the bathroom saying, "Are these guys going to kill me?" And she said, "No, you can trust them." Didn't know anything apart from just spend a night playing pool, stayed the night on the couch. We played some music. They were musicians as well. Found out when they dropped me back in the morning, because I'd left my car, just my rental car outside the bar, and left my guitar inside the bar. Ended up getting a residency at that bar, which was cool. Found out in the morning that was John Mellencamp's best man at, I think, all four of his weddings. He's been married a few times. And the other guy was a guy named, I'm not really supposed to mention who the other guy was, but he worked for John. And I thought he was an accountant, but he wasn't really. He did other stuff.
Okay. So that's sort of an opportune moment. It's like things line up, right?
Yeah. So they had actually talked to John after meeting me, and I was really pissed off because about 3 days before I saw them again, they said, "Why didn't you tell me who you were?" Because, you know, John's always approached by people. And they'd set up a meeting. Basically, they said I could go and meet the band, and they drew me, they showed me where the rehearsal studio was. And the band, I've got some good photos actually, where I'm playing John Mellencamp's guitar with his band, Kenny Arnoff, who's pretty famous. And his almost his entire original band, Toby Myers, Michael Wancheck. He still plays with a bunch of them. Yeah, I got some good photos of that when I went, because I got to jam a few songs with the band before John. See, John makes his band rehearse for 2 weeks, then he joins them for a week. So I got to meet the band and have play some songs, which was kind of cool. There's a songbook on the table, and they go, "Do you know any John Mellencamp songs?" And I said, "I got that songbook for my 16th birthday, so I know pretty much most of the songs." And I said, "What's that songbook doing there?" And Michael Wancheck said, "I went and bought it yesterday because we forget the songs, and he makes us rehearse them." So it was easier that he bought the songbook from the music store, the John Mellencamp songbook. So then a couple of weeks after that, I stopped in, and John Mellencamp was there with the band. And all I remember, like, John can be a real asshole, if understand. He's notorious for that. But I remember when I got there, it looked like the band had seen a ghost because it was like a glass door. And Kenny Arnoff poked his little bald head out, and he goes, "Hey, Jesse, this is not a good time, man." And then John Mellencamp was like, "Is that Jesse Wild I've been hearing about?" And then Kenny shut the door in my face, looked back at him, and he beckoned me in, and I went in, and it looked like everyone had seen a ghost, and they thought, this is not going to go well. But because T, his best man, one of his best mates, had said, "Don't you give this guy a hard time, he's a good guy," he came up and shook my hand, and he says, "Why don't you sit in the corner and I'll show you how it's done?" And I sat in on the rehearsal. So that was.
Isn't that a line out of The Devil Went Down to Georgia?
Maybe.
Show you how it's done.
Yeah. It was like, "Hey, you just coming and trying to take over the place." I did have a gorgeous girlfriend with me at the time, too. And I think that helped.
I heard an interview with the drummer of John Cougar Mellencamp or his band. I can't remember the name, but I do remember him saying that he has certain expectations of his band members. He expects the work ethic to be there.
And he expects them to come up with ideas all the time too.
Yeah, that's right. And the guy was positive about.
That would have been Kenny Arnoff. Yeah. I think I've seen the same interview.
Yeah, okay.
He was the nicest guy of the whole band, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah. I helped him pack up his drums one night, and he said, "I'll be eternally grateful." Steve Earle, that's a whole other story. Well, I never got to meet Steve when I was in America because he happened to be in prison at the time. But he'd had a little trouble buying stuff on the streets that wasn't legal. And
produced on Copperhead Road, was it?
Probably.
Is that like a song from a kind of a real situation, maybe?
Yeah, but seeds were from Colombia, not Mexico.
That's right.
That he was buying. And so I got to meet his sister, Stacey Earle, and I got to meet his bass player, a guy named Kelly Looney. And in fact, they were playing this tiny little place called Tony Roma's Rib Joint. And I got up and sang with them on a few songs because I gave Stacey my cassette because back then it was, I only had a few CDs, and I gave one of the CDs to Bob Seger, and I gave a cassette to Stacey. In fact, she said, In his prison cell, he's got a cassette player. So I had a cassette, so I gave him a cassette, and she gave it to him in prison. And I don't know about this because I was really drunk when I finally got to meet Steve Earle, and I didn't even ask him this, and I thought it would be a bit cheeky, but I wrote a song called Wild Angel way back then, and he got out of prison and wrote a song called Angel, She's the Devil You Know. And there's some similarities there, but if he did plagiarize me, I've certainly plagiarized him. We borrow from each other all the time.
Was there a consistent kind of personality trait with these people, not only them, but others you've met, rock and rollers? Are they kind of molded in a particular way or what?
Oh, hard workers, the ones that lasted, they're really hard work, really dedicated, single-mindedness of focus. They come off as maybe arrogant, but really they're just so focused and they don't want to waste time. And they've been kicked in the guts so many times, John Mellencamp especially. I mean, actually all of my influences had to claw their way up to the top, So when I finally got to meet Steve Earle, it was through Graham Brazier, and he'd become a good friend. And I love Graham, and I've still got the backstage pass hanging on the wall of the studio somewhere. But what happened is my band was between me and Graham Brazier. I had the Jesse Wild band to support him at the St. James, I think it was. And Graham got the gig, and it was like the last minute. They announced it like the day before the gig, so I didn't even have a ticket for the show. So luckily the promoter got me a ticket, and I went in there, and Graham felt really bad about it because he knows you're the Steve Earle guy. And I said, what was it like to meet Steve Earle? Because he's the only one on my list I haven't met. And Graham Brazier said, I never got to meet him. He turned his back on me. He was going to – he's got a – Graham's a bit funny like that. I love Graham. And so he literally – he asked me if I'd give him a hand with his amp and his guitar down to the car, and down to his taxi because he never drove. So I actually said, F of Graham, I'm not your roadie. And he looked really – and then I said, I'm just kidding. I'll give you a hand. So I gave him a hand, and then as he was butt-hopping to the taxi, he took the backstage pass off his head and put it around my neck. And and I went up to the bouncer at the door and I said, can I go in here? He goes, we've got one of those, you can. And I walked straight past Steve Earle, and because he was sitting right next to Kelly Looney, and I mentioned Tony Romo's rib joint. He goes, Jesse Wilde, he remembered my name.
Wow. Okay.
So then Kelly Looney said, this is Jesse Wilde. He met me and your sister. And then he goes, yeah, I know. And he did sort of recognize who I was. And I wished I hadn't had so many Heinekens, but people had bought me all these beers to commiserate that I didn't get the gig. But it was okay. We met, we talked, and it was blurry.
That's pretty cool. Those are great stories. I want to ask you, before we get on to the song, I want to also ask you, because I had relatives in Auckland from Wellington, used to visit them quite a bit. They're up in Ponsonby there, and I used to go to the glue pots sometimes. And actually a relative of mine is married to Lyle Kinney, the bass player of Hello Sailor at the time, and Dee Dee Smash, and Lyle's still around.
Yeah, yes.
And used to see some of, you know, their gigs there. And then I moved to Auckland about 5 years ago and was there for just over 4 years. And I used to walk past the glue pot, what used to be the glue pot, virtually every day. And I used to think, you know, this area here has such a, I don't know, a place in our music history, yet it's kind of like it was never there.
If you see that right behind me, you can't, there's actually a poster of us, my first band, standing on the at the glue pot. And that's after my first ever album was live at the glue pot. And that was right around when I knew Graham and all of those guys. Oh, it was an incredible venue. It had three different bars too. It had like a public bar, and we used to play the corner bar all the time. And then upstairs was, I only played that a few times when supporting international bands and things like that. Yeah.
It's New Zealand Music Month, and on this show we've played a few, you know, a whole mix of Kiwi songs, but a few classics. How do you rate that time in our music history, if you like? Mid-70s through to mid-80s, I guess, is what I'm referring to.
I was born in 71, so I really only got onto the scene probably early 90s. I was quite young when I started. I was about sort of 17. And and back then the drinking age was 20, I think. And so I was playing underage in bars for quite a while.
Right.
But no, the scene was incredible. I mean, Hello Sailor were like, and there was the Exponents, Hello Sailor, Midge Marsden, Hammond Gamble. I got to meet all of those guys. I got to do support for them a lot. And we had a band called Acoustic Attitude, and they liked us. We were long hair, but we were playing old school music. So we were playing like Crosby, Stills, Nash, Bob Seger, Mellencamp, Neil Young, and there were three singers in the band and a bass player, Willie Seifert, who's no longer with us. The other two are still good friends. There's Aaron Carpenter and Kerry Irrawaddy, and they've all kept on playing music. Oh, it was just an incredible scene. Like, I literally, from our first gig, we got a three-night residency at a little. So I quit my job, like,
quit your day job, right?
Yeah, I quit it like 2 weeks later. Much of the terrified, you know, my parents were going, oh, this is crazy. But, you know, I've made a good living out of music. I own a really nice recording studio that I'm sitting in now, which it's called Wild Records. We're just 2 minutes walk from the town hall. It's probably maybe the second biggest studio in New Zealand, I'd say. Oh, okay. Now. And sort of area-wise, I think Neil Finn's got a slightly bigger, his round head studio
with his Neve desk.
Yeah, he's got his big Neve desk. Yeah. So yeah, he would be our one of the best studios in Auckland, but I would rate us up in the top three at least. Wild Records,
yeah,
recording studio, 38 Airedale Street. Give that a little plug.
Yeah, no, fine. Here's a question. You mentioned Crosby, Stills, Bruce Springsteen. I mentioned when we're introing. There's Neil Young. There's Joni Mitchell. They all seem to, and there are more. They all seem to. Well, in my assessment, fail a kind of test, the rock and roll test.
Yeah.
And we're going to get on to, you know, what Chris Hipkin said in just a moment and your song. But they did, didn't they? And I think many of us find it difficult now to, I don't know what the word is, respect, follow, listen, with that knowledge to those artists now. And I don't think any of them have modified what they said or...
No, and it makes...
Whatever. What do you make of that?
I think a lot of them were threatened. In fact, I know, talking to some people that I know, they were threatened from the powers that be not to speak out against it. And I don't like, and I honestly, you know, hey, but rock and roll, well, I'm a rebel, you know, when I get threatened, I do exactly the opposite. But I hear exactly what you're saying. You know, I respect artists like Van Morrison and Eric Clapton. They spoke out against it. But what amazed me at the moment, I mean, people will look at a packet of, you know, they'll be buying something at the supermarket and they'll look at the sugar content and they'll look at how much fat's in there. I mean, people do that a lot, nutritional facts. But then they won't think twice about getting the jab. That really amazed me. It is hard to, some people I really respected, and even people in the health industry and stuff, I thought, man, you know, I didn't understand it. But I think there was pressure. I know there was pressure, and certainly some, the more famous you are, the more pressure there was to comply or to be seen as complying. But, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. My favorite saying is all my conspiracies have come true. So to
it's not theory.
To classify myself as a conspiracy theorist, I have to get new conspiracies. But I do think there was, I think some of the powers that be were talked to about it. I don't think everyone got the same jab. I think they were different. I'm quite certain. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if some of it was saline solution and.
You mean performative jabs rather than the real thing for the media, perhaps, and exemptions? We've heard about over 11,000.
I wouldn't exemptions. Be surprised about that very much so. And if they didn't speak out about it, I mean, and it makes sense if they gave everyone a really toxic jab and everyone got really sick straight away, people would have cottoned on to it. I think they staggered it out and I think they had different formulas, but I don't know.
Bit of a slow-moving train wreck, let's say, or maybe I could put it that way. All right, to those comments, or that quote, that response of Chris Hipkins in September last year, there was no compulsory vaccination. People made their own choices.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you kind of reacted similar to myself and other folks in hearing that. In fact, that, you know, steam started sort of blowing out of my ears when I heard that. How can we explain what he said there, do you think?
Well, I had just seen the movie River of Freedom. I tried to get down to the protest, but because I had no exemption, sorry, I had no, I didn't even know what they call it, was that vaccine pass? I hadn't had it.
Neither did I.
I didn't have whatever it was called. So I had to get a RAT test to leave Auckland. That's how bad it was. And Jason had mentioned he was going down there, Jason Kerrison, who sings on the song. And he's a very good friend of mine. He played at my 50th birthday party, and I went up to his 50th birthday party. There were hundreds of great musicians there, and we all played together. And he was going to go and perform on the steps of Parliament, and I sang backing vocals on the song. There's several people saying backing vocals on the song called Heads We Win, Tails You Lose. And he released it under, and he did two songs. He did another one, Fear Over Freedom. And he released it under the name If Not Us, Then Who. Have you heard those two songs?
No, I haven't.
They're well worth looking up. And they're both about what was going on. He performed it on the steps of Parliament. I went and got a RAT test, failed the RAT test, and I remember speaking to my wife. I already had WorkSafe was sending me letters and calling me up saying I was playing illegally in the bars because I was still playing because I had an exemption from my doctor which predated the illegal mandate. Well, I think it was an illegal mandate.
I think it was actually, but they may have changed the law to exactly. adjust that.
So in my opinion, so then I got Frontline Law to write me a letter. They were the same lawyers who got the mandates dropped for the Defence Force and the Police Force.
Yep, we're aware of them.
So they wrote me a letter. So I had this thing that this exemption that predated the mandate and with this lawyer's letter and I had one booking agent who said you'll never work again, and another booking agent who said I booked you more than anyone else through this whole period, you know, and so all credit to him, and I don't really want to go naming names, all of that, because I have.
Why would someone say I'd never book you again? That sounds personal.
He said you'll never work again because you haven't.
Oh, you'll never work again. Okay,
because right. You haven't followed the you won't be allowed into a bar. And then, and so everywhere I went, I would have to show for several of these things. I had to go and get RAT tests, and I had even got some PCR tests, which I wasn't happy about. So I had to turn up to these gigs with a little certificate to say I didn't have COVID. And then certain venues would let me in, and some venues didn't even ask. And they trusted my exemption, and they trusted my, you know, so, but technically it wasn't, you know, from the government, and it wasn't this and that. It was just right at the start of the pandemic, Jacinda said, she said, consult your doctor. And I did that. I consulted my doctor, and I won't mention her name. She's amazing, by the way. She's asked me not to mention her name. And I consulted her, and she said, under no circumstances should you and your family get it. I don't believe, she didn't agree with, she thought the technology was too new. She didn't know how safe it was. She didn't know how effective it was. And she promised that if we did get sick, that she would look after us. And I just took her by her word. So I did what Jacinda said.
Okay.
And then she wrote me.
Well, I wish more doctors had done that.
And she wrote me the exemption on the day. She didn't know that it was all going to change. Back then, doctors can write exemptions. And we also have freedom of medical choice. It's written on the High Court. You can't force anyone in this country to have cancer treatment.
No, and I've been there. I know that one. I think Jacinda also said if you get a reaction to it, it means it's working well.
Yeah. Well, there's some.
That may have been the truth.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. That RAT test that you failed, were you feeling ill at
I
the time?
Wasn't, and I, this I, is the other thing. So everyone just trusts those RAT tests. I don't trust them at all. But I spoke to my wife, and she said, look, if you, with all the stuff that's happening right now, see, my wife and my daughter didn't take the jab either. We were really a family. That was the hardest thing to keep my 18-year-old daughter, or she's 17 at the time, and she turned 18 in the middle, and she wanted to go out to the bars and celebrate. But I remember her saying, oh, Dad, this exemption's not going to work. This lawyer's letter's not going to work. And then she rang me up drunk one on her 18th birthday, a proudest moment in my life, saying, I love you, Dad. I got into all the bars. They all accepted the exemption.
Okay, phew, eh?
But I said, I said, if there's a problem, I'll come and talk to them, and I'll also get my lawyer to come and talk to them. But I know that sounds cocky. I don't know.
You just reminded me, because I was around Auckland at the time, and, you know, you have your regular places you go, you know, bars and cafes and stuff. And I felt very sorry for a lot of particularly young women, because a lot of them were in hospo. Mm. And they were put at the front line of potentially very hostile confrontational situations that they have really no knowledge of how to deal with. Yet they had to take, you know, I mean, obviously people were angry that they couldn't access things and, you know, felt that they were being a second-class citizen. Yeah. Yet it was, you know, the most,
some of them,
inexperienced and vulnerable who took it.
I think a lot of them didn't want to do it, and I think some of them reveled in it, enjoyed it, which amazed me. So what happened is, so I got this RAT test, and then, because people just accept that, so I went to the hospital and I asked them for an antibodies test, and they said, well, you're the first person that's ever asked for one of these.
Right,
so I went to the Auckland Hospital, and they they did, and it did cost me nothing. They did a COVID antibodies test, and it came back negative. And then several months later, I did get sick. I got some, and to my doctor's credit, she was there literally that day with everything I needed, and some things, were trying to be stopped in this country, and I.
Yeah, we know what you're talking
and,
about.
So I got over it within probably a week and a half. And then about 3 or 4 weeks later, because you had to wait a certain time, I went and got another antibodies test, and I had COVID antibodies. So now I had my lawyer's letter, my exemption, and an antibodies test. I had three things that, to sort of add. So that's what I couldn't believe. And the other, I remember I was walking the dog around this time, and we're down Queen Street because we only lived like 2 minutes walk from the town hall. And I was with my wife, and I went into Starbucks, and I needed to use the bathroom. And I remember she asked me for my pass, and I said, I don't have a pass, but I'm going to use the bathroom. And she called the cops on me. Luckily, they took a little bit of time, and they didn't get there. So I don't know how much I'm going to be incriminated for that. But
yeah, just madness, right? Just madness.
Yeah.
Could you ever have imagined, well, I suppose, maybe in hindsight we can, that
I couldn't,
because we've always prided ourselves in freedom and everything.
I actually couldn't. What I couldn't believe the most was we live in this politically correct world where you're not even allowed to call someone a gender anymore. I don't know how that works, but I remember talking to my daughter about it and how they were schooled that there was, 50 different genders or whatever. But that's what I couldn't believe. You can't discriminate towards gender and things like that, but you could discriminate against someone who did some research and said, I don't think.
Okay, so let's quickly talk about the song before I get to play it. I'm looking forward to that. So when was this written? I see the date stamp on YouTube, but that's not necessarily reliable.
No, I literally
about a month ago.
Wrote it pretty much. It was all around the same time. I went, because there is a date on that. River of Freedom, I went and saw that at the Civic when they had a premiere. And I was blown away by the movie, loved it very much. And then it was maybe a day or so later, Chris Hipkins said that to the media. It was all around the same time, and I sat down and I wrote that song probably within, half an hour. It just came flowing out. And my wife actually helped me a little bit, Kath Vincent. She came, she thought the song, this sounds really good, and changed a few words and stuff. So I gave her a songwriting credit. She's an amazing lady. We bounce a bit like Yoko and John Lennon.
Okay. You haven't slept in been in a bed in a shop window in Auckland downtown ever, have you?
We haven't done that yet, no. But there's a couple of songs we've written together now, and we work really well together. So I wrote that song, and I ended up contacting Gaylene Barnes, who was the director of River of Freedom, and she made the music video. I just jumped in front of a green screen, and she put all the background stuff. I wanted to get it out, quickly, but it took a few months to finish the song, and then because of my musicians, my drummer came and played on it, and then my guitarist did some stuff, and I got a really good friend who played the keyboards on it. I've mentioned all of those on people who played on it on YouTube. And then Gaylene did the video, and then I released it, and I thought no one's going to listen to this, but to be honest, it's been my most played song.
Was that right?
It's been my most played song. And so on Spotify, on YouTube, and and I was going to say, through the whole pandemic, musicians had it hard. I know everyone had it hard, but musicians especially had it pretty hard, going out and performing, and they were trying to social distancing. And the one thing that musicians' job was to get more people into the pub, but they didn't want more people in the pub because they had to social distance people at the pub.
Well, that all turned out to be a load of bollocks.
It did.
It was never a thing, social distancing.
But if there's one thing you can do to support musicians in this crazy world that we live in, is to follow them on Spotify. Spotify, like Jesse Wild with an E. So it's Jesse Wilde. Go to Spotify, even if you've got a free account, and click follow. And then go to YouTube. You have to log in with your Google thing. People forget the thing.
Most people do. Yep.
And subscribe to the YouTube channel. There are two things that really help a musician. Cost you nothing, But there's sort of certain milestones, and I'm trying to get to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube and 1,000 subscribers, followers on Spotify. And you think that's not a lot, but to be honest, there's so many musicians, they're lucky if they get 1,000 plays of their song. You know?
Yeah, right.
Because 100,000 songs are uploaded to Spotify a day, if you know that.
Well, how many?
100,000. You can Google it. It used to be 60,000. And this is why Daniel Eck, who owns Spotify, never has put money back into the music industry, because he's swamped by songs every day. Unlike Netflix, who actually do put some money back into the, you know, TV and movie industry.
It's incredible. Jeez. So many combinations of notes then, right? Probably infinite. Yeah. Okay, Jesse Wild, it's been great chatting with you. Really interesting. Good to hear about early on about running into all those big rockers, and that's cool. And hearing about what you went through and all the other musos and all of us, really, in that period of time. We're going to play the song now. We Had a Choice. Got a question mark on the end of it. And it features Jason Kerrison. Thanks for coming on. We'll enjoy the tune. All the best.
Thanks for having me, my friend.
Just when I thought I'd seen it all, they invent a new drug that puts our backs to the wall. And I would have thought history had taught us the powers that be aren't the ones you can trust. And how can you say we had a choice when the people spoke up? You silenced our voice. You locked us all down. You poisoned our youth. You claim yourselves as the one source of truth. Your people lost their jobs. Many lost their health. Well, your beehive fully squandered our country's wealth. You divided our people, mandated demands. No amount of sanitizer can wash the blood from your hands. How can you say we had a choice when the people spoke up? You silenced our voice. You locked us all down. You poisoned our youth. You claim yourselves as the one source of truth. Once again, all the hard-working souls paid the highest price for the government controls. Am I the only one? Am I losing my mind? Who's gonna pay for all these crimes? Who's gonna pay? Who's gonna pay? Who's gonna pay? In charge, they won't confess they did anything wrong. No, they just walk away. But I have to believe they'll face the judgment day. Now how dare you say we had a choice when the people rose up? You silenced our voice. You locked us all down. You poisoned our youth. You claimed yourselves as the one source of truth. How dare you say we had a choice?
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.